All right. I guess he won't be eating it. But nothing else. I need to see if I can find any electronics or his phone. The fact that we haven't found any so far worries me.
Thanks.
The detective disappeared down a hallway or something, and we didn't really care what she was up to because Atticus was heading our way with sausage, and that was vitally important. Orla and I were basically sweeping the front stoop with our tails, and Starbuck, sitting between us, quivered all over with excitement. Atticus squatted down on his haunches in front of us and smiled.
This'll take the edge off until I can find you something with gravy on it, eh?
He opened the bag, and a heavenly scent wafted forth. Yep, we all drooled. But when Atticus pulled it out of the bag, a big, stout cylinder of cured beef with a delightful pattern of marbled fat showing on the end it had been cut, we all realized at the same time that he didn't have an easy way to divide it up for us.
Oh, I didn't bring a knife. That was stupid. Sorry, hang on a second.
Orla asked for clarification when Atticus didn't move but just kept staring at the end of the sausage.
How long is a second again?
Basically useless unit of measurement because humans use it to mean anything, I said. And he wonders why I have trouble telling time.
Wait up. This doesn't look right.
Atticus said, keeping his voice low.
There's a fissure here. Or something.
He put his finger and thumb to the center of the sausage, and with just a little bit of effort pulled out a neat little chunklet of it, leaving a rectangular hole in it that was much deeper than the small chunk he pulled out. He hollowed out the center of the sausage! What kind of monster would do such a thing? Well, I tell you, Atticus, these vegetarians have to be stopped.
It's hollowed out because he put something in there.
Atticus nearly whispered and tossed the small chunk at Starbuck, who snatched it out of the air and said, "Yes, food!" Atticus upended the sausage over his hand and shook it up and down. A slim black rectangle of plastic fell out of the sausage into his palm, and he didn't look at it long before standing up and pushing it into his pocket.
Stay here, please. I'm gonna go cut this up for you. Thanks for being patient.
Wait, Atticus! What just happened? What was that thing? Atticus switched to his mental voice to make sure the detective didn't hear him.
I'm not sure precisely what it is yet, but there's a good chance it's what got Hudson Keene killed. No tech in the house and no phone, but we have a flash drive hidden in a sausage, which was itself hidden in the back of a vegetarian's refrigerator. And very carefully, too. Neither I nor the detective saw that little cut at first glance, so whatever's on this flash drive was worth the trouble in Hudson's mind.
Atticus rummaged around the kitchen using a paper towel to touch everything so he wouldn't leave fingerprints. He found a cutting board and a knife, wrapped the towel around the handle, and began chopping. So what you're doing right now, besides chopping up sausage, is destroying evidence?
Yep.
This is probably not a Squid Pro Go thing you're doing.
Nope.
You could get in lots of trouble if the detective found out.
Yep.
So why are you doing it?
Because you're hungry. And because, at this point, I think our unorthodox, extra-legal methods are working much faster than conventional law enforcement. When the detective finally pulls that footage of the parking lot, I'm sure she'll see the same person covered up, head to toe, with no distinguishing features, and any license plate they get will turn out to be stolen. And I bet the person will disappear from the shot, too, after a short while. I'm sure that's why they were hugging the building walls coming in. They knew where the cameras were ahead of time. They made and used an untraceable weapon that can easily be melted down to goo. They hit him in public and ran, as professional a hit as you could imagine, except for Suluk's presence. But just think, if Suluk hadn't thought Keene looked like me and gone after him, they would have caught him all alone in that stairwell, no witnesses. So as Saluk said, this wasn't a crime of passion, or a case of being in the wrong place at the wrong time. It was a well-planned assassination. And that means that there's a big pile of money behind all this. And you know what that means for law enforcement?
It took me a moment, but then I got it. They're gonna run into a lot of lawyers at some point.
Exactly. Delays and obstacles while the bad guys get away. But we're going to skirt around all of that. We're already far closer behind them than they thought anyone would be.
Atticus put down the knife and brought over the cutting board, clutching it with a paper towel. He quickly threw chunks of sausage at our mouths in turn, and we caught them all, and it was all gone in about a decade or whatever.
Yum, that was some delicious evidence,
Orla said, and Starbuck and I agreed.
But I'm still hungry. Are we going to get something with gravy, too?
Heck yes. Let me say goodbye to the detective, and we'll go like squid pros.
Atticus no sooner said that than the detective shouted from somewhere in the apartment.
Ah, son of a...
My druid dropped the cutting board and darted into the apartment, calling,
Detective?
That's all right.
I heard her reply.
I was just startled. That's a damn big lizard.
Hmm. Oh, indeed. That's one impressive iguana. Out of his terrarium.
Privately, Atticus shot a thought to me.
You called it, buddy. Lizard in the house.
Iguana! Chicken of the trees! I may have been licking the cutting board at that precise instant, but I am very talented and can ingest sausage residue and think about chicken at the same time.
Yeah,
Detective Ibarra said.
Look at how it's all messed up. The rocks and sand and shit all over. They were looking for something in there.
Atticus knew exactly what they were looking for because it was already in his pocket. But he said,
huh, that's strange. Well, look, Detective, I've fed my hounds and don't wish to intrude any more than I already have. But I would really love to help some more if I can. Will you call me, please, and let me know what you find out about Hudson Keene? I'll be returning to Eugene tonight, but I'm also flexible. I'm at your service if you need me.
Yeah, all right. Thanks, Malloy. I'll call you when we know something.
We reached the bottom of the stairs as Detective Ibarra's backup arrived in the parking lot. We three hounds walked out of the complex with our druid walking us on leashes. But they weren't holding us back. No, sir. We were way ahead of the police and headed for justice. And gravy, of course. Well, if you think about it, they're almost the same thing.
Chapter 4. The Crypto Keeper.
Atticus led us to Random Order Pie Bar so we three hounds could enjoy the rich gravy of their pot pies, for he had made a solemn gravy promise earlier and needed to keep it. While we were eating, he made a phone call, and we listened into his side of it.
Hi, Ernest. Connor, my lawyer. Say, since you're a computer whiz of sorts, I wondered if you might have a standalone machine handy on which to try suspicious flash drives, check for viruses, things like that, without being on the net? You do? Fantastic. Might I trouble you to inspect something? I promise to pay you for your time, and if it turns out to be something terrible that destroys your machine, I promise to replace it.
He paused to let Ernest reply, then said,
Absolutely. I'll drop by this evening if you wouldn't mind sharing your address. And what do you like to drink? I'll bring some of that too, then. Thanks.
Was that Ernest Goggin Smythe, the human of Jack the Poodle and Algie the Boxer? We had met them recently because Jack had been kidnapped and we rescued him.
It was. We'll see them when we get back to Eugene.
He made another call to an actual private investigator in town, and we swung by there to pay them some money. He wanted a background check on Hunter Keene and some family history as soon as possible. After that, there was nothing for us to do until we saw Ernest that night, and we were finally able to enjoy Portland's parks and smell things. That did mean, however, that by the time we returned to the train station for the afternoon ride home, we were pretty dang tired, giving the train only a cursory inspection for squirrels before boarding and curling up for a nap. We never did find out if the squirrel got out of the stairwell or not. When we arrived in Eugene, Atticus told us that he got a couple of calls while we slept. He filled us in on the way out to the truck and on the way to Ernest's house.
The reason Hudson Keene looked so much like me is because he was a descendant of mine, albeit many generations removed. I'd been trying to hide from Angusoga, New York, in the late 19th century, and my relationship with a woman back then resulted in his birth more than a century later.
Oh, suffering cats, Atticus. I'm sorry.
Yes, it's very sad. Hudson looked to have a bright future, and seemed to have inherited my paranoia along with his features.
What do you mean?
The reason the police never found a phone was because he didn't own one, so far as they know. If he had one, he used burners only, like me. And his digital footprint is absurdly small. He has a bank card, but only uses it to buy coffee at different shops around the city. He was purposely all over the place. All his other financial transactions are deposits and withdrawals of cash, with no clear indication of where it's coming from. He's unemployed so far as the world is concerned, yet he clearly has an off-the-books income from somewhere. The best guess we can make right now was he was doing some kind of super-secret science.
What kind? Not weird science.
Hudson graduated from MIT last year with a chemical engineering degree, which means he graduated from both high school and college early. Big brain, in other words, and in the employ of someone who wants no clear records of his employment. At this point, I'm just hoping it's not narcotics.
Does he have a secret lab somewhere behind a bookcase, and you have to pull out a volume of Paracelsus to make it open? Wait, Atticus. What if he's one of the guys working on the elusive triple non-fat double bacon 5-cheese mocha, as foretold in the prophecy?
Gods below, I'd forgotten about that. You never did tell me where you heard such a thing. But regardless, I think we'll find the answer on that flash drive.
Ernest Goggins Smythe was a very nice guy with an unfortunate foot odor problem and a habit of wearing t-shirts he bought at comic cons. This time he wore one from the movie Tucker and Dale vs. Evil. Atticus said he was a British expatriate, which may or may not be the same as an expatriate. He said such things were complicated. Ernest worked from home as some kind of IT professional and showed dogs on the side, so I doubted he owned any other clothes except for one suit he wore on the show circuit. He practically ignored Atticus and just paid attention to me, Orla, and Starbuck when we arrived, asking only if we could have snacks, which Atticus agreed to. Atticus watched him pet us and make silly noises for a few years while he looked around. We were in a sort of living room that Ernest had tricked out to be an extra-large office. He had one of those extra-long wooden tables you find in libraries with reading lamps at either end, a kind of deluxe office chair at his workstation, but a couple of wooden dining room chairs down at the other side. His work area had 3 different monitors and 2 keyboards. He had some code on one that looked like something from The Matrix, a video game paused on another, and the sci-fi movie Arrival playing at low volume on a third, because I recognized the heptapod noises. He told Atticus in his British accent,
Laptop's on the end, ready to go. It doesn't have much on it in the way of apps besides antivirus software. Run them all on your flash drive, and then we'll see what you have on my station.
Atticus thanked him, and I shot him a mental request. Hey, tell me what you're doing and seeing while I'm getting bathed in adorations over here.
Sure thing, buddy.
Ernest asked him if it would be okay to take us out back to play with Jack and Algy, and Atticus said that would be fine. In less time than it takes for a badger to get angry, we were outside smelling asses and having a great time. I was already in a friendly, chewy boxing match with Algy when Atticus told me what was on the flash drive.
There are three encrypted files on here, and I have three decrypt keys provided by Detective Ibarra.
She gave you decrypt keys for the evidence you stole?
She had no idea they were decrypt keys. They were just three strings of 64 digits each they found in his apartment, taped to the inside of his closet wall. And she thought it was a code instead of the key to something else. She thought it would be harmless to give them to me. Though, I did have to ask to see them.
Ha ha! You? Harmless?
Running virus scans on here now. I'm sure it'll be fine, but best to be sure. How are you doing?
Or they just tagged in against Algy and she took him down. He couldn't believe it and he's all rambunctious now. You know, rambunctious is one of those words that's as fun to say as it is to be. I got rambunctious after that and lost some time playing around. But eventually Atticus came outside and told Ernest the flash drive was all clear and he'd like to take a look at the files on the sweet custom setup. Ernest said we should just keep playing while they went inside, and I reminded Atticus to keep the play-by-play going.
All right. First file decrypting. Huh. It's a Word file with the title Stable Solar. Opening now. Doing a bit of speed reading. Holy shit.
What is it?
Well, it would seem my descendant was a genius who had solved the world's energy problems, which would basically pit him against everybody currently producing energy. No wonder he was paranoid.
But solar, though? I thought that was already a thing.
It is a thing, but the only reason solar hasn't already wiped out gas and coal and the rest of it entirely is because it's inefficient, and to keep the lights on at night, you'd need much better battery storage than we currently have. He's claiming here to have solved both problems. He's increased the solar efficiency of perovskite cells to 49%. That's really high. You can make solar practical in the upper latitudes with that. And he says he's figured out a way to stabilize the rapid degradation of perovskite surfaces in humid environments. And he also has some kind of new rechargeable battery that will store the excess electricity for nighttime usage. Well, now we know why he was killed.
Is there any proof this is real?
I'm assuming the other two files are schematics for the cells and the battery, but we'll see. Point is, even the threat of this being real would get him killed, and he knew it, so he was operating as anonymously as possible.
So that's why his place was trashed. They were looking for this, which means they'll be looking for you.
Nobody knows I have it, except you, and you won't tell anyone. And they might not be aware it exists. They probably have his computer and think that's sufficient. If they're looking for anyone, it's for the person listed on the paper here with him. Ignacio Medina, Ph.D. He was the electrical engineer part of the team. I need to call the detective. But let me confirm what these other files are first.
Wait, Vaticus, are you going to tell her you stole that from the scene? She'll put you in jail.
No, I'm just going to get her to look for Dr. Medina. Yep, these other files are schematics for world-changing tech. That tells us why Hudson was killed. We just don't know who did it.
I want to hear the phone call with the detective. Let me in.
Sure, let's go. I've got what I need here.
I gave Algy and Jack friendly nips on the ear as a goodbye, and Atticus retrieved us from the backyard. He said thank you and goodbye to Ernest without biting his ear, and dialed Detective Ibarra from the cab of the truck.
You might already know this, Detective, but Hudson Keene was working closely with a Dr. Ignacio Medina. Might be a good idea to track him down.
No, I hadn't heard this. How did you find out?
A private investigator.
Okay. Who?
I'd like to keep that private.
The detective sighed.
You really can't. Look, Malloy, on the one hand, I appreciate your help, sincerely. But on the other, your methods are the kind of thing that defense lawyers love to use to create a reasonable doubt. They will either take apart your testimony or get your evidence tossed out because we can't account for how it was gained. You see? So if you want to continue to help, we need you to be more forthcoming. Or I need you to get your PI license or become a registered informant with the department. I'm already getting a headache trying to figure out how to report you finding the missing wallet and keys.
Okay.
I confess, this isn't really Connor Malloy, but someone else using his phone to give you an anonymous tip on the Keene murder. Ignacio Medina worked with the victim. He may know something.
Damn it! Ibarra said before Atticus ended the call with his thumb. You keep making her mad, Atticus. Is that wise? Maybe you should buy her some tacos or something to apologize. I know for a fact that she likes carne asada with cilantro. You can buy a few extra for us to test them, just to make sure they're good enough for the detective.
Maybe another time. I'm ready to go home. We've had enough mayhem for one day. Chapter 5. Owl, see you dead first.
We had a fine sleep and woke up to the smells of Atticus cooking breakfast in the kitchen. He likes to make himself omelets with vegetables in them. But he always cooks up some bacon or sausage for us, and sometimes there's even gravy to go on top. This morning he made us some cherry wood smoked bacon that had been cured with celery salt, and it was fine and mellow and served up with a plate of scrambled eggs. We hounds went outside for a while, patrolled the boundaries of our property to make sure there were no squirrels around. And when we came back in, Atticus was sitting at his computer, marveling at the plans of Hudson Keene and Ignacio Medina.
Geniuses,
he muttered, and he shook his head.
I really need to go back to school. The science is moving ahead so fast.
He put Bull Durham on Blu-ray for us so I could teach Starbuck about the lava lizards of the Galapagos Islands and why he should never be a lollygagger. Just as Abby Calvin Lelouch was telling Crash Davis he wanted to announce my presence with authority, an authority from Portland called Atticus. He paused the movie and put Detective Ibarra on speaker.
Medina was killed in the Eugene train station, same method as Hudson Keene. A hard plastic bolt to the head. Turns out Keene had taken Medina to the Portland station to see him off.
Where did they find him?
Atticus asked.
They got him in the men's bathroom.
So it wasn't the same killer. It couldn't have been.
Well, it's theoretically possible, but he would have had to drive like hell to beat the train. And if he did that, he wouldn't have had time to come back up to Portland and ransack Keene's place before we got there. So we're talking multiple perps here.
Where does Medina live?
I'm calling you from his place in East Portland. It's been tossed, just like Keene's, but so far no string of numbers hidden anywhere. No damn iguanas either, so that's a plus. Financials paint a picture very similar to Hudson's. Lots of credit card visits to coffee and donut shops. The man liked his voodoo donuts. But otherwise, everything's cash.
So someone is secretly financing two engineers, but we don't know where they were working, unless it's in those coffee shops.
Well, sort of. Turns out they were leasing an office on the second floor of the train station. We don't know why, though, apart from the fact that the space is pretty cheap. There's almost nothing in it. But we'll see if we can get any camera footage of them in the coffee shops. Maybe get lucky and figure out why someone wanted them dead.
We already knew why, but Atticus wasn't going to tell her that. We had to figure out who was paying Keen and Medina, and who was paying the assassins. It looked like it was going to be all about following the money, which disappointed me. Hounds aren't great at following bank transactions.
Because they were both murdered the same day, in the same way, and their financials are almost identical, I don't have to use that anonymous tip someone gave me to connect them,
Ibarra said.
But if you, or your anonymous source, know anything else, I'd be happy to hear it. I'll let you know if I find something, Detective.
Atticus said.
I don't suppose you got anything from the cameras at the station.
Yeah, we pulled the footage, but I haven't got a report from my people yet.
Let me know when you do.
The detective agreed, and after they hung up, we were able to get to the part where Crash was instructing Ebby on his cliches before the phone rang again. It was Suluk Black.
I was going to take my time visiting you and call before I got there,
she said.
But now I'm wondering if you can pick me up near Eugene. I think someone's on my tail.
Of course, no question. Can you make it to Island Park on the east side of the Willamette River near Springfield? We'll meet you there as soon as possible, maybe 40 minutes. We'll be in an old blue Chevy truck.
Orla and Starbuck elected to stay and finish Bull Durham, while I went with Atticus to pick up Suluk. There wouldn't have been much room in the cab of the truck if we all went. And I have to admit, as much as I love Orla and Starbuck, it was nice for just a little while to have the window all to myself. The air rushing past my nose was cool and fresh and smelled of adventure. I may have been romanticizing a little bit, but I couldn't help it. When Atticus gets his jaw set and clenches his hands like that, I know something's gonna happen. He was driving super fast, like barely keeping the tires on the road. What's got your aggro turned up to 11? I asked him when I thought we were halfway there.
Guilt ferrets,
he answered, and I knew what he meant. They're bastards. Hard to shake off once they start in on you. Over what?
Over Kodiak's death. I don't want Suluk's death to be on my conscience, too.
But these guys, they're not after Suluk because of you, right?
No, I know that, intellectually, but guilt ferrets don't care about that. They latch onto your emotions anyway and bite. And since we're now on the way to pick her up, if we're too late, I'm gonna feel like I should have bought a faster car or shifted to Eugene and tried to defend her instead of pick her up. Something else than simply doing all I can right this second. That's how guilt ferrets work.
We'll get there in time, Atticus. I have a good feeling about this. But that good feeling slowly drained away as I started to worry maybe we wouldn't get there in time. Old Chevy trucks don't move like Camaros or Corvettes. I don't know what kind of animals are associated with worry, but they were sure chewing on me something awful. Maybe bats. They kind of fly like they're worried, and I certainly worry about them when they fly near me. So that was it. Worry bats were eating at my confidence. Island Park was situated around a bend of the Willamette River that sported an island shaped kind of like a dachshund's body. You could see the island if you followed some footpaths that took you down to the shore. But from the parking lot, looking west, the river was screened by a stand of trees. There was one of those modern playground areas with plastic stuff for kids to romp around on to the north, the ground coated with rubberized asphalt to cushion your ouchies when they fell down. We really couldn't see much beyond the parking lot and playground because of the trees all around us. So Luke wasn't waiting anywhere in sight. We got out of the truck, leaving the doors open and the engine running, and Atticus called Suluk's name. The answer he got was a low buzzing noise coming from the direction of the footpath. What is that? An attack helicopter?
No, not enough chop to it. I think it's... yeah, it's a drone. And there's Suluk.
Three kinds of cat shit, Atticus! They're chasing her down with a drone? Don't those things have missiles on them? Suluk was running toward us from the north, parallel to but not exactly on the footpath. She was running a lot faster than I thought she would, more like a pro athlete than someone who had to be super old if she knew Atticus from way back.
Not this kind. It's a spy drone, and since it's mostly plastic and I don't have line of sight to what isn't plastic, I can't do anything to bind it. This modern tech can be trouble.
So what are we gonna do?
Strategic retreat. Back in the truck and stay in the middle so Saluk can cram in.
He was already moving back to the driver's seat, and I jumped in from the passenger side and tried to visualize myself as a compact model hound, like a Yorkie or a Pomeranian. Very fuel-efficient dogs who could live on like 2 Vienna sausages per day. Atticus hopped in and slammed the door shut, and with him next to me and Suluk approaching fast, I didn't think my visualization was going to help very much. Unless I was the one who got squeezed down to the size of a Vienna sausage. We became a chorus of strained grunts when Suluk half leapt into the truck and unintentionally smooshed us to the left like rebels in an Imperial trash compactor.
Go!
She huffed before she even got the door closed, and Atticus peeled out of there, heading back to the road. Suluk wrestled the door shut with an oof, and then took two whole quick breaths before pointing out the front window at a slick black car squealing its tires into the lot as we were going out.
That's them! I lost them at the other end of the park, but they kept tabs on me with that drone.
Atticus noted that they had tinted windows and he couldn't see inside, but they saw Suluk in our truck or already knew she was there. They fishtailed behind us to give chase, and I didn't think we'd stay ahead very long. That car looks like it has a lot of horses under the hood, I said.
It's a Dodge Charger with a Hemi engine. We don't have a prayer of outrunning it. How many in the car?
Atticus asked Suluk.
Two? They're armed with those little crossbows. No guns? Not that I've seen so far.
Atticus had us back on Main Street, headed back toward the cabin. It would eventually turn into the Mackenzie Highway, but while we were in the city, it was leading us past businesses and neighborhoods that smelled like waffles for some reason.
Are they controlling that drone from the car, or is someone else feeding them info?
Atticus asked.
I don't know.
Suluk replied.
How do you want this to end?
Atticus said as he began to weave in and out of traffic, pressing down the horn.
Well, the crossbow they have means it's the same guys from the train station, and now they're trying to kill me for witnessing their dirty deed. The police are not an option, and I don't think they'll respond to a polite request to leave me alone. There's always running.
She snorted.
In this old thing? No. I mean on foot. We get past town and there's all this wooded area on the right-hand side. We pull over, run in there, and just disappear.
How about a compromise?
Suluk said, peering over her shoulder at the charger. Her eyes narrowed the way humans do sometimes when they're ready to deliver some pain.
We run into the woods and make them disappear.
I turned to look at Atticus to see his reaction, and his eyebrows were climbing to the sky.
You sure you want to play it like that?
Yes, I'm sure. These aren't people who have a legitimate beef with me. They're being paid to kill strangers, and they're obviously fine with that. Best thing they can do with their lives right now is become fertilizer.
All right.
Atticus asked me to duck my head down while he checked the mirror.
They're hanging back a bit. Maybe we won't have to do this. They're hanging back because they have a drone and can't lose us. Once we get past the city and the road opens up, they'll close the gap.
Atticus only nodded, his mouth set in a grim line.
Can you take out the drone?
Suluk asked.
Once we're out of the truck and in the woods, yeah.
He said.
I'll go halvesies on the assassins with you after that.
Okay.
What about me? I asked. Atticus went ahead and answered me out loud, figuring Shuluk wouldn't think he was crazy for talking to a hound.
Oberon, we need you to run straight into the woods and just bark the whole time. They'll follow the sound and won't be looking for an ambush. When I pull over, we're all going out the passenger door to keep the truck between us and them. Leap over the fence and get into cover quick as you can.
Atticus did several illegal things on the road, and we nearly hit or got hit several times, but somehow never picked up any police pursuit. The local law enforcement must have been occupied elsewhere. Nobody said anything until we passed the final stoplight, when Atticus broke the silence.
How did they even find you?
He said.
I don't know. That's one of those questions you ask later.
Shuluk turned to look out the back window.
Here they come.
I don't really have the trick of mirrors down, but I think I saw that black charger getting closer behind us.
That's fine. I see where we're getting out.
Atticus pointed to a dense stand of timber coming up on our right. I wish I knew what kind of trees they were, but I honestly don't know what to say, except that they had leaves instead of needles. Just the small green buds of them, though, since we were in the earliest part of spring, and the trees were kind of yawning as they woke up from winter sleep. Atticus pulled off onto the shoulder, and the ride got bumpier, and he warned me to brace myself for the hard braking. As soon as we stopped, Shuluk threw open the door and pelted for the barbed wire fence. She surprised me again because she wasn't just fast for a big person. She was faster than pretty much every person, like Atticus when he was getting boosted from the earth. We were already over the fence by the time the charger stopped behind our truck and two men got out. We paused to look back at them, both white guys with sunglasses.
Where's the drone?
Shuluk said.
I'm sure it'll be along shortly.
Atticus said.
When we got out of town, it probably couldn't keep up. They'll send it in after us here.
Hey, Atticus, I don't think those are plastic crossbows. One of the men had a small box thingy in his hands, which was probably the remote control and monitor for the drone. But the other one had ducked into the back seat for a second and came out with a gun in each hand.
Oh, shit. Into the forest and bark like I told you,
he said, and we took off just as a couple of shots followed us and whacked into tree trunks. I started barking while Atticus and Shuluk started stripping on the run, and I understood what they were up to then. Those guys weren't going to be following two humans and a hound much longer. By the time the drone caught up, they'd probably already be shifted into something else, which meant I was very shortly to be in the presence of a great big bear. Atticus only had to take off his jacket and shirt, and he was ready to go. He triggered one of those charms on his necklace that bound his shape to a great horned owl, and he just sort of flew out of his pants and sandals. He flapped hard and went almost straight up into the branches of a tree where he could watch for our pursuit.
Keep going, Oberon, and keep barking, he said in my mind.
Great big bears don't fly out of pants or anything else, so Shuluk had to try to run and undress at the same time, just flinging clothes onto the forest floor. Well, I was barking and taking frequent glances over my shoulder, not really running too fast. We didn't want to lose them or make them give up. In fact, since I didn't see any pursuit, I stopped and turned around, shielding my body behind a tree trunk and peeking around to one side, woofing steadily. Shuluk passed me, trying to kick free of her pants. And then, a few seconds later, there was a series of popping noises, followed by a low grunt and a whiff of something that wasn't human anymore. My ears laid back, and my tail ducked down by instinct as I turned to look. Shuluk had become a Kodiak brown bear, which is not a grizzly bear, but rather the greatest and biggest of great big bears, just like Irish wolfhounds are the tallest of all hounds. She tossed her head at me once, and then loped off to the side, circling back toward the road. I stayed where I was and barked some more, turning to face the edge of the woods again. The drone was entering underneath the canopy, and the two white men entered behind it, one of them with the remote and the other advancing with a gun in each hand. The remote control guy sent that drone flying straight in my direction, and I barked at it like any normal hound would, until an owl descended from above and just tore it apart with its talons. The man holding the remote cursed, and the man holding the guns joined in after a few seconds, and I chuffed a few times as Atticus flew into the canopy, and they watched him go in slack-jawed disbelief. That's when I remembered I was supposed to keep barking, so I started up again. But they were mad now, and I was making myself a target. God, will you shut up, you stupid mutt! The man with the guns shouted, and he fired a couple times in my direction. They weren't well aimed, but at least one of the bullets smacked into the tree behind me and to my left. Well, I was pretty sure that was my job, to keep them annoyed and their attention on me. So I moved my head to the other side of the trunk and kept barking. The guy who shot at me really shouldn't have done that, though. Radicus can be fiercely protective of me at times, and I think this was one of those times. While I'd been barking and they'd been cussing and shooting, he'd circled around behind them through the trees, and I saw him swooping down silently on the guy holding the guns, talons outstretched. He shifted back to human in midair so that his feet planted themselves right between the guy's shoulder blades, and he went down with a squawk, holding on to only one of the guns, the other one flying out of his hand. Atticus wasted no time. Before the Duke could recover or his buddy could process what happened, Atticus grabbed his head and twisted hard, snapping his neck. No fuss, no miss. Then he stood up quickly in front of the other guy, all naked, so his dangly bits were kind of jiggling around, and he smiled and waved in the friendliest manner, as if he hadn't just killed someone. "Hi," he said. "Who the hell are you?" the drone pilot growled, tossing away his remote and balling up his fists.
"You shouldn't have shot at my hound, or at Ignacio Medina, for that matter, or Hudson Keene. Was that you who shot Hudson Keene in Portland?"
"What? No, we just had the job in Eugene. Hey, screw you, man."
Atticus just smiled even more widely at him.
"Your buddy got the better deal. Never saw what hit him. Hardly felt a thing. You're gonna get torn up, though, by that bear behind you."
"Whatever, man. I'm not falling for that."
But Suluk Black charged in, roaring at that point. And a genuine Kodiak roar isn't the kind of thing Atticus could manage through ventriloquism. The drone pilot turned, saw her, and screamed, having just enough time to process that those claws were going to be the end of him. A couple weeks back, when we were saving Jack the Poodle and a bunch of other hounds from a nasty human in Arkansas, the man got torn up pretty good by a much smaller bear before Atticus could call him off, because that bear was pretty angry, having just been sprayed with shotgun pellets. Well, Suluk was angrier than that, and Atticus couldn't have called her off even if he wanted to. There's a reason I'm afraid of great big bears, and Suluk demonstrated why perfectly. Every time she took a swipe at that drone pilot, parts of him flew away. And I'm not just talking about blood. I mean chunky parts of him, like limbs or hunks of flesh like pot roasts. And soon after that, internal organs. But she left his neck and head alone so he'd know what was happening and could feel it all. She didn't stop until he stopped screaming. And then she sat down on her hind legs, calm as you please, though she was breathing hard through those bellows in her chest.
It's all right now, Oberon, if you want to come back.
Atticus called. I came out from behind the tree and trotted back maybe halfway before I stopped. This looks like a good place to relax and wait, I said. I really didn't want to get too close. You have to get dressed and stuff, right?
And stuff, yeah.
Atticus agreed. He looked over his shoulder in the direction of the road as the sound of a big 18-wheeler rumbled past. He couldn't see much, though, so that meant the truck driver couldn't see the carnage from the road either. Atticus turned over the body of the guy with the guns and searched for car keys. Once he removed them, he took a deep breath and closed his eyes, and soon after that the ground underneath the assassin started shifting. Suluk grunted in surprise and stood up, backing away. My druid was having the Willamette Elemental swallow up the bodies and assorted parts so that there'd be no evidence. I noticed that he buried the drone in the guns, too. While he was doing that, Suluk lumbered away out of sight, and I heard that popping noise again. I guessed she was modest about her shifting process, which was strange, because she had no problem walking around naked in front of Atticus. She strolled back to check on his progress, her hands a bit bloodstained. And when the ground stopped moving and Atticus opened his eyes, she nodded at him once.
Thanks, she said,
and he tossed her the keys, which she snatched out of the air.
Huh, new car. Thanks again. It's later now,
Atticus said.
So let's ask that question again. How did these guys find you? Who the hell are they?
Suluk shrugged.
No idea. The killer in that stairwell didn't get a good look at you, right? He probably saw me okay, but it wasn't for very long, and he certainly didn't snap a picture.
Oh, a picture. That has to be it. Not good, though.
I don't follow. I'm still piecing it together, so I'm thinking aloud. You said these guys had those plastic crossbows, right? We'll find them in the car?
Yeah.
So they're related somehow to that Portland murder. And they wouldn't have reason to go after you except that you witnessed it, right?
Right.
Well, clearly these are high-tech guys with their weapons and their drones. It's easy to see how they tracked you once they found you. If you're an anonymous bystander, how did they find you? And the answer is surveillance footage.
From the train station?
At first, yes. You're under surveillance almost anywhere you go in a city these days. You're on camera 40, 50 times a day, easy, just walking around town. So they take a screen cap of your face in the train station, run it through facial recognition software, and then start running searches for a match. That's how they found you in Eugene.
Shit.
But that means some serious stalking and resources.
That's right.
But they have to have access to the train station footage to begin with. And who had that?
Suluk swore again.
The cops.
Exactly. Someone in the Portland PD is helping.
Well, I'd like to stuff a whale down their cheese hole. I'd never heard of that particular hole before. I'd have to ask Atticus how humans were managing to keep them hidden if you could insert whole whales into them.
You'd better just go. Take their car and get out of here. Disappear for a few months in the woods. If you stay away from cameras and don't have a human face to recognize, you'll be in the clear.
Suluk nodded.
All right. I'll go to the Strawberry Mountain Wilderness in Malheur National Park, somewhere around the Strawberry Lake. Good.
But after I get dressed.
Chapter 6. There are rules about tacos.
Once Suluk drove off to the east in the Charger, Atticus called Detective Ibarra and asked if he could buy her tacos for lunch. She gave him an address, and he said we'd meet her there in an hour. We drove back to the cabin, fixed up a snack for Starbuck and Orla, and then we shifted to the Japanese garden in Washington Park where Atticus had bound a tree. We had to jog from there to 16th and Northwest Northrop in the Pearl District, where there was a taco cart that the detective claimed had the best tacos in Portland. It was called Frog Town Tacos, and they made their tortillas fresh right in front of you on a hot grill thingy. Atticus bought a huge mess of carne asado tacos, four of them just for me, and asked that they leave off the onions on mine. We took them back to the detective's tiny car, and the human sat on the hood and chowed down while I properly wolfed down my tacos once Atticus unwrapped them for me. They were so delicious, and I had to make sure she knew I appreciated it. Atticus, you need to tell Detective Ibarra she has fantastic taste. I think she's all right, and it's probably okay to call her Gabriella now.
No, buddy. I don't think she'd appreciate being called by her first name. We don't have that kind of relationship.
That confused me. Humans can share amazing tacos with someone and spill stuff out the ends and stain their clothing, yet still maintain formal relationships. Well, I thought sharing tacos automatically meant you were friends.
I wish the world worked that way. But it doesn't.
Well, at least tell her she knows good food.
You're right, Detective.
Atticus said around a mouthful.
These are the best tacos in Portland.
Right?
She said, her mouth also full. She smacked her lips a couple of times and waved a hand around at the intersection.
I mean, it's got shit for seating, I know, but you can't beat the quality.
Well, I've got shit for details, but you can't beat the tip I have for you.
Oh, yeah? What's that?
Someone working the case in your department is taking money from the same people who paid to have Keen and Medina killed. You have a corrupt cop on your force.
Detective Ibarra stopped chewing and glared at Atticus in silence for a few decades. He did not appear concerned. In fact, he made me proud by stuffing half a taco into his face, showing that he had no intention of elaborating on that, no matter how dirty a look she gave him. When she raised one eyebrow at him in an attempt to make him talk, he just raised one of his eyebrows in return. His cheeks puffed out like a chipmunk. She shook her head, finished chewing, and dabbed at her mouth with a paper napkin before saying anything more.
On what evidence are you basing this accusation?
Atticus took a moment to clear his mouth before saying,
I can't share that. Sorry.
Well, you have to give me something. I can't investigate a colleague without cause.
You know what these murders are about?
She shrugged.
Money would be my guess.
Mine too. Specifically, money from the energy industry.
How do you know that? Did you figure out something from those numbers I gave you?
No.
Atticus lied.
Just deductive reasoning. Ignacio Medina was an electrical engineer, and Hudson Keene was a chemical engineer. Put those facts together with their secret bankrolling, and they were probably working on breakthrough solar tech, which would create lots of enemies. Autocratic nations who depend on oil would be threatened, let alone multinational corporations.
Plausible, sure. But you're withholding something from me.
I withhold plenty from you, and you've known that from the first day we met. I freely admit that I occasionally dabble in matters beyond dog training. But I hope you also know I'm trying to help you. Look, it doesn't matter to me if you charge your colleague with this or that. You can keep it all hush-hush, so long as he talks. He's not the priority. Following the money is, because whoever paid off your cop will lead you to who's behind the murders of Hudson Keene and Ignacio Medina.
Well, I think we already have at least one of our murderers on tape. Wanna see?
Sure.
She ducked into her car for a moment and fetched a tablet, then returned to sit next to Atticus on the hood. I positioned myself so I could get a look, too, and Atticus helped make it look natural by petting my head. The video was one of those black-and-white security feeds with numbers flickering in the corner, which Atticus called time code, and which meant I'd never have a chance of understanding it. It was a shot of the Portland train station platform with a bunch of humans milling about as the train left the station. The detective pointed to a couple of them.
"There,"
she said.
"That's your lookalike, Hudson Keene. That woman right there, see her?"
She paused the video to get a freeze frame.
"She clearly knows him. They're talking and smiling. She walks with him into the station, into that stairwell, and then, a few minutes later, she walks back out with her hood up. Looks Native American, maybe."
"Maybe,"
Atticus said. "But he could do better than that. She was of the Aleutic people who live in the Kodiak Archipelago, and he knew it because we were looking at none other than Suluk Black." "Hey! Why, she all buddy-buddy with him. I thought she said she chased after Hudson because she thought he was you."
"She did, Oberon. She flat-out lied to us. She knew him all along, and also knew I wasn't dead."
To the detective, he said.
"Was she the only person to go into that stairwell with him, or come out?"
"No. There's someone else who goes in and comes out. We can't identify at all. Look."
She let the video play again, and pointed to someone going into the stairwell after Suluk and Hudson, wearing a balaclava and sunglasses. That fit the description of the murderer that Suluk gave us, at least.
"Whoever that is looks pretty shady,"
Atticus said.
"Yeah, but the problem is, we have no way to trace that person, and there's no obvious display of the weapon on either of them. What we have to do is find the woman Keene was talking to, because she either committed the murder or witnessed it."
"How long have you had this video?"
"Me, personally? A couple hours, maybe. Just got around to it."
"But the department pulled the video long before that, right?"
"Yeah, why?"
"Like I said, someone in your department is dirty. You need to take a look at whoever saw this video before you and follow the money from there."
"Connor, wait,"
she said. "And don't think I didn't notice she used his first name. She knew the rules about tacos and friendship, even if Atticus didn't."
"Do you know who this woman is?"
Atticus shrugged.
"I might know somebody who does. Make you a deal, detective. I'll try to track her down for you, and you look into your department for me.
Somebody had to make a big cash deposit in the last couple of days."
He thrust out his hand for her to shake, and she considered a moment before taking him up on it.
"Wonder if I'm making a deal with the devil,"
she said.
"Nah, no worries about that, detective. The devil would never be interested in animal rights."
"You probably have a point there. What's your hound's name again? Oberon?"
I perked up at the mention.
"Yeah, that's right.
Think he'll let me pet him?"
I didn't wait for Atticus to say yes. I just wagged my tail and walked around to her so she could get to it.
"I think you have your answer, detective."
She gave me some scritches and told me I was a very good boy. Then she looked up at Atticus.
"You know, Connor, when it's just us like this, you can call me Gabby."
"You see, Atticus, I was right. It's always first names after tacos. There are rules."
Chapter 7. Strawberry Fields for a Year.
Atticus isn't perfect, but he likes to think he is. He doesn't like to be taken for a fool, but whenever it happens, he mutters a lot. After saying farewell to his new friend, Gabby, he repeated in stunned disbelief,
"Suluk lied to me. What the hell?"
And endless variations of that. We jogged back to the Bound Tree in Washington Park and paused there while he got out his cell phone and called Suluk.
"Great timing,"
she said.
I'm about to drift out of tower range.
Where are you?
I'm in Burns, getting ready to ditch the car and walk into the National Forest.
We need to talk. Meet you at the lake in an hour?
Sure. We shifted home after that and checked in with Starbuck and Orla. Grainne was home.